Broadcasting by the sea in sunny San Diego, this is the Ascended Masters at Work show, where we lift the veil of mysticism and reveal ancient secrets brought to earth by the world's greatest spiritual teachers. Here we share real-life stories that change lives and widen our eyes. And now, here is your host and spiritual life coach, Reverend Shirlene Reeves.
Well, good after Thursday noon. I'm just so glad you're here with us at 2 o'clock California time in sunny San Diego. And we have such a great show today. I'm really looking forward to it. But I wanted to update you on the event that we had last Saturday. It just was phenomenal. The people that showed at the event got so much out of it. And what a blessing that was, because as I told you in the past, I was in the Tetons and I was spending my time in the moment. Do you know what that means, spending your time in the moment? That means I wasn't thinking about anything else except where I was in that moment. And it's amazing the messages that come through to you when you just slow down enough to spend time in that space. And I was so fortunate because everything I learned for the event actually showed up when I was in the Tetons. And in fact, I had so much material, I didn't even know where to start to put it together. And then I got this wonderful message that said, don't worry about it, everything's going to be fine. And believe me, it was, because I tried to arrange that course over and over and define it by times. And do you know, I had Dot Claire with me. She did a fabulous job at opening and closing the event. And I said to her, take a look at what I had written that I was going to teach, and then you compare it to what it was that I actually did teach. So, you know, if you can spend some time in the moment with the great masters, it will totally shift your life. And a big part of why I do this radio show is so that you can see I'm not the only one who receives these messages. Everybody that comes on this show has a story to share about how spirit directed their lives and how it enhanced their lives. And the reason that I'm doing this is because as a small child, I felt very much alone. I had no one to talk to about this connection, and no one would listen to me. And I want to show you that there's a lot of us out there that have these experiences. And this show will be every Thursday at 2 p.m. and you'll hear a new story every week. And maybe it will prompt you to share your story with others too, so that they know that they're not alone. Now, the person that we have coming on today to tell her story is in Germany. So we've reached worldwide on this syndicated show, and she has come to share with us about difficult divas. And I happen to love that name, difficult divas. I've known a few myself. And she is an opera singer, which is really going to be interesting too, to have an opera singer. And she knows that in order to perform, she has to be in the present. And she's actually an American opera singer and a performance coach. And she's a professional speaker too. And her topic is all about presence. And in her coaching, she uses innovative approaches to help her clients master having a very strong inner presence while owning the room and exuding a dynamic, exciting outer presence. In her keynotes, she combines leadership and music together with such talks as the Carmen Effect. I'd love to hear that one. A strong woman for strong leadership. And she's also the co-author of several books in German. Get that, in German. But I promise you she'll speak English to us today. And she'll be releasing her own new book coming this month, I believe, called Dealing with Divas, A Mindful Approach to Improving Relationships in Your Business or Organization. And she helps the reader master just two things, two very, very important things. And I agree with her 100%. And one is to remain calm and centered and focused when dealing with difficult people. So here she is. I want to bring her on right now. Laura Baxter, our opera singer. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Charlene. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm excited to have you. How is it in Germany right now?
It's beautiful. Right now where we live, one of the largest beer festivals in Germany is taking place right now. So it's beautiful weather, and right now it's nighttime. So beautiful
wow.
weather, and the beer festival itself is just over. It goes to 11 o'clock at night. So it
oh
ended
my gosh.
10 minutes ago. Yes.
So it, you got it's, in it just for 10 in days. Time, didn't you?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So I always promise everyone that they're going to have a special story. And I was wondering how your spiritual connection has helped you or influenced you in your work.
The spiritual connection, I would have to say that spirituality or the spiritual connection has helped me throughout my entire life. One of the first memories, I've got a lot of childhood memories, of different spiritual experiences. One of the first really deep experiences that comes to mind is when I was about 12 or 13 years old. I did a guided meditation for the first time, and I realized it was a fascinating experience because it was a very simple meditation of simply you go into a relaxed state, and then you get into an elevator, and when the elevator doors open, then there's something supposed to be there, depending on what the meditation is. And in that moment, I think the meditation was about you're going to see your future, your goals or whatever. And that was the most intense experience that I had ever had. That when those elevator doors in this fantasy world opened, I just could see my path so very clearly that I realized that meditation, that spirituality, is an incredible part of who we are and what we need in order to be able to not only survive but really succeed. And there's a very strong, one of the other things that I realized, not just in that moment with that meditation, but through the years afterwards, is how absolutely interconnected we are. That each of us, we're connected to a very, however you want to describe it, a very deep universal energy. And what affects one part of that energy affects every other part. And that energy itself is absolutely totally and completely all-encompassing and all-loving. Those experiences have guided me and helped me in every which way throughout my singing career, throughout my coaching career, and of course many, many other experiences since then.
So I got to ask you, so mm-hmm. when your elevators opened,
yeah.
did you see yourself as an opera singer?
I saw myself as a singer at that point in my life, but it wasn't just that. It actually had to do with questions that were even more short-term goals. What I needed for school, what I needed, the things that were worrying me at that moment. I can't quite remember now what exactly that was, but things became, questions that I had at that moment became so very clear.
Mm-hmm.
The answers became so very clear that I thought, This is absolutely fascinating. And I knew, you mentioned in your introduction about this voice that came to you as you were walking. And that's, through nature and everything. And that's what I realized is there, that mm-hmm. there's something there guiding us, however you want to call it. If you want to, say, your guardian angels or your there's something there guiding us. And if we just take a moment to be quiet and listen to that, then we can actually tap into something far, far greater than ourselves and far, it's amazing, far more powerful than
mm-hmm.
ourselves.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I was teaching this past Saturday was how to read the signs. And if we have a path and we're on the right path, we need to learn to read the signs so we can stay on the right path. Have you ever noticed that yourself?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's It's so clear. I mean, I always say that my guardian angels are absolutely, they think I'm stupid because, you know, when I do something I'm not supposed to be, when it's something that's not part of my life's mission, not part of my, what I'm supposed to be doing at that moment, you know, I get slapped down. It's clear. it's just very clear. You don't need to, you know, be a mind reader. You don't really have, it's just so clear that this is not, you're not doing the thing you're supposed to do. And when, however, again, when it's the path I'm supposed to be on, then for whatever reason, doors open that just, who would have thought is possible, you know, who really would have thought it was possible to do this thing that before I thought, no way, I'm not good enough, or I'm not, that's, I can't do that, or I don't know anybody who, you know, who can help open that door for me or whatever. But it's part of the path that I was supposed to be on. Then all of a sudden the doors open. And that is, that's just, an, it happens so often. It's not even funny. It's just, it's amazing.
Yeah. I always say if it's meant to be, it'll be easy. Because anything that's hard to do, it's our own free will. We can get support with that, but it's still our own free will. And it may not be the way it was supposed to be. So we may not be able to keep it in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. That is, I think that's absolutely right. I believe in hard work. I don't think it's not, you can't sit on your couch and, you know, have people come to you and say, oh, this is your path. That might be part of what happens to some individuals, but I do believe it's our obligation to work towards whatever. Mm-hmm. And then it will become clear if that whatever is right or not.
But it's like you say, the doors open so easily mm-hmm. when it's meant to be. And when we push and push and struggle in order to get what we want. And I've done that in the past, and I fell down the rabbit hole for 5 years at a time.
Oh, I've done that too.
Yeah. And you really learn, you know, you really learn. And you talk about your angels talking to you. You know, mine have such a sense of humor. It's ridiculous. Oh, and I find myself laughing a lot of the time because it's so ridiculous. But if we can just stay on that path, that's the big thing is, are we watching for the signs that guide us to stay on our path?
Yeah.
That's the question I asked.
Yeah. I mean, for example, you asked me about, did I know when I was 13, I wanted to be an opera singer? No, I did not. I knew that opera existed, but I was not, I was interested in musical theater. And that was my love. That was my dream. That's, you know, and I did everything I could to go on that particular path. But there are two things in my person, and I have done a lot of musical theater as well, and I've directed musical theater, and I still love it with a very deep passion. But two things happened as I got a little bit older. The voice matured very quickly, and it was too big for musical theater. Mm. And the other is I don't have a dancer body at all. I danced quite a bit and you know, throughout, even through college, but that I still did not have a dancer's body and could not be a professional dancer in that from my abilities. So there's still a lot of musicals you can do, but it became clear with every step that the path was not musical theater, it was opera. And then obviously I got to know that the operatic repertoire more, and I began to love that and realize how rich and absolutely fascinating it is. And you know, and that's one example of just when you keep going, you have different paths, and you're going to be shown those paths. You're going to be shown, okay, not exactly this, but you take a little bit of this and you add it to that. And even with my career now, you know, I sang with the National Opera Company in the United States. I've sung many an opera in worldwide, I mean, Tel Aviv and Italy and whatever. But at some point, especially actually the main point started when we started our family. At some point, you realize that it's not just this one career. If you asked me today, would I like to be full-time in an opera house? I would say no. Because then I realized to a lot of different things, a lot of different things, including once the children were there, I still continued to do auditions and everything else. And I realized that I was sort of sabotaging the auditions because I wanted something else subconsciously, or I needed something else than what was happening. And this whole sabotaging, which I didn't understand at the time, led me to take quite a few courses in mental training, everything from hypnosis to NLP to Suggestopedia, all different types of trainings where I got certified so that I could train other people as well, because I wanted to understand what the psychological side was. And in that path, Shirlene, what happened is that's when I began to give the seminars I give. I began to meet people that are outside of the academic world, outside of the music world, and I found that they have needs that really I could meet. And I could meet with this combination of opera, you know, musical theater with that, but opera and the mental training. And that's been beautiful.
Wow, that's awesome. So if anyone would like to call in and talk to Laura and ask her a question, you know, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to speak to an opera singer in Germany. Call in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Now, Laura, I know that presence is a real strong part of your work. So can you tell us what role presence plays in your work as an opera singer?
As an opera singer, it is essential to be, and what I do now as far as singing goes, I should say I still do quite a few concerts. I'm still singing, but it's mostly oratorium and concert work. And the principles there are the same. When you're singing repertoire that's as difficult as operatic repertoire or as difficult as an oratorium, it is essential that everything come together at once. In other words, that you are centered and focused, calm, so that you can breathe deeply. And obviously, you've got to be mentally alert to be able to sing the repertoire that you've been training all this time. And I remember one moment I was singing the Verdi Requiem, and there was one moment in this beautiful concert, huge cathedral here in Germany, and I looked at the audience. I was singing the Lacrimosa, and I looked out at the audience, and people were crying, as they were supposed to be. And you know, I was listening to the room and listening to the orchestra and singing, and I thought how amazing it is. How amazing it is to be really one with this entire situation. And the entire situation was not just me singing this thing or people coming to see a show. The entire situation was this moment. This moment of this, the acoustics created by this building with this number of whatever thousand, you know, people in the audience with this orchestra, and it was amazing. All I could think of at that moment was, if I can show people how to do this when they're giving a presentation, that would be absolutely magical. How to be so centered and focused and look at the situation, be very fully aware, fully mindful of everything going on around you, the sound that you are making. In other words, if you're giving a presentation, what you're saying, the audience, their reaction, their feedback, as well as the acoustics of the room, everything, you know, the orchestra in that case, in a presentation situation, you know, everything as far as your flip chart, your PowerPoint, everything you've got there with you on the stage, if I can show people how beautiful it is to be there in that moment, and how absolutely clear and magical that is, that would be wonderful. And that was where this interest kind of started, more than anything else, with the word presence.
Mm-hmm. And, it takes practice, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because I've noticed when I first started, it was hard for me in the very beginning to stay present for any length of time, because my mind would start to wander. And I really practiced that recently in the Tetons, to just really stay present and listen to the birds. And of course, I was listening for grizzly bears too, because they were out there with their cubs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's, yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it's kind of scary on the trail, and you got to carry your bear spray. So you really got to be present at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The presence itself has a lot of different aspects. One of which in my work on presence, I talk about the four different aspects of presence. The first aspect is the inner presence, the ability to be centered, to be able to breathe deeply, to be in your center, but also in the here and now. Then the second part of presence is the outer presence, the ability to own the room, to emote in that you're still staying, just like in that example with the Verdi Requiem. I was in my center, but my voice was emoting, my energy was emoting into the room. So to be able to stay in your center, the inner presence, but also to be able to own the room, to send your this electromagnetic field that each of us emotes from our solar plexus, to send that energy into the room so that the people in the room feel your presence. That's the outer presence. Mm-hmm. And the third aspect of presence is to know and be fully aware and fully mindful of your own goals and to prepare for those goals. And the last aspect of presence, especially in a business situation or in the situation of what I talk about in my book or in the situation of giving a presentation, the last aspect is to understand people, other people, to be able to connect to people themselves, because we're not isolated, each of us, in our experiences. And it's very important to connect to those around you, not only spiritually, but also to connect to them so that you can communicate with them.
Mm, makes perfect sense. So you have an outer presence, an inner presence, and goals to focus on at the same mm-hmm. time. Did yeah. I get that right?
Yeah, and then an understanding of human nature. Yeah, mm-hmm. And as far as your question about, you know, you have to practice. Yes, all of those aspects you've really got to practice. I mean, again, we'll just take the situation when I was singing the Verdi Requiem. If I had not learned my music. You know, if I had not learned how, you know, what notes I needed to sing at that moment or what texts, then obviously my entire focus on that evening would have been, how do I get through this? You know, mm-hmm. It's not in that situation. It's not possible to be in your center because you're in your head trying to figure out where you are at all. That's sort of the mental game of it. Then there's the physical game of the singing. So in learning, you can know the notes and you can know the notes and you can know the words, but it's got to be in the muscles, especially with a difficult work like the Verdi Requiem. If I push too much too early, then I won't be able to make it through the entire piece, especially not at the end. And so you've got to be able to literally get the piece of music, get that work in your muscle. In a presentation situation, you really need to understand the information you're about to convey to your audience. And once that's happened, then that part of you can kind of rest. You know, the mental, you've mentally and physically prepared yourself with the material. And the other thing you've got to prepare beforehand is to know how to breathe deeply. So we can talk about, okay, you're very prepared, you know your text, you've got everything memorized or whatever you want to, for this presentation you're going to give. But if you've never experienced what a deep breath is, then you're not going to be able to breathe deeply during the presentation.
Right.
This is very important to learn how to be centered and focused, how to be present. And that really does take practice. Because everything around you will distract you and bring you about, bring you away from being centered and focused.
I agree with you 100% because I teach, when I teach massive visibility media and I teach people how to show up on stage or how to show up on a TV interview or even on the radio, like what we're doing right now, they'll say to me, well, I don't know what to say. But the reality is They do know what to say. They know who they are. They know what their expertise is. And so that makes the mental part really easy. Mm-hmm. They just have to get beyond that panic that comes up right in the beginning of thinking they don't know what to say. Because if they can get in their physical, like you said, and start breathing, mm-hmm. that makes all the difference in the world. Then they can get past that flash of fear, I call it, mm-hmm. and they can actually say what they need to say. It may not be real eloquent yet, but it will be over time because they mm-hmm. really know what they're doing.
Yeah. And what you're saying, I really believe, I mean, I say this about the music when I'm working with my students here at the university on their singing, but I really believe we are only vessels. And vessels for either the information, for example, if you're giving an interview for the person on the other side of the interview, the vessels for them to connect to who they are, their greater self, if you will, in the case of singing, to connect to the music, to the universe or whatever. But it feels like you are a vessel. Mm. If you're truly centered, if you're truly in the moment, and also if you're truly present, there is no better word, then everything flows through you and you really have nothing to do with it. That sounds very strange. I said that in a talk a couple of weeks ago, and the person, you know, said, "Oh, but it still has to do with you, your person." And I said, yes, there's a uniqueness about each one of us. And that uniqueness does show through. But in that moment, what I said in my talk was, it literally feels like the music is flowing through you, through me. I'm not doing anything. And for whatever reason, that is exactly what touches the audience more than anything else. If I'm in that state, then they become, the audience becomes absolutely moved by it. And I can't control that. I'm just the vessel. And that's a fast, I think that's true in everything we do. If you stay centered and connected to who you are, things that come out of your mouth are actually amazing because it's not being filtered through your brain. You're literally a vessel for this message, whatever that is.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to leave you on that note for just a second, Laura, and we are going to cut away to commercial, and we'll be back in just a minute. So hang tight with us and give us a call and talk to Laura at 888-627-6008. Hi, I'm Charlene Reeves with Maximize Your Wealth Now with a new tip on how to maximize your wealth. What if you could compel your clients rather than selling them so that they would work with you? Wouldn't that be so much easier? Wouldn't it be easier to have more income? I talk to entrepreneur after entrepreneur, and they're running from networking group to networking group, and they're so tired. And the reason they're tired is because they're not making any money, and they don't know how to work with their perfect clients. What if I said to you, compel, don't sell, and I could give you the tips for how to do that? I'm tearing back the curtain, and I'm going to show you how I built my business from zero to multi-millions, and I want you to make multi-millions too. So check it out on my website, maximizeyourwealthnow.com, and get signed up for the next class. I promise you, I guarantee you, you won't be sorry.
I invested in Charlene's Compelled to Sell sales training program, and I just knew immediately that she was the person that I wanted to work with.
I came in wanting to know how to get more people I could talk to. And I also learned some things I didn't know that I didn't know. And now I know. At least I have a good idea.
The reason I took this course was because I felt like there were a lot of new things that Charlene had to offer that I had not experienced before. That's why I took the class, is I wanted to sort of up-level my sales skills. And thank you, Charlene, for this amazing class.
In 10 weeks, 8 Compel Don't Sell students made a total of $301,000. Isn't it time to make a compelling difference in your income? If you answered yes, call 1-888-889-9212. That's 1-888-889-9212 to register for the next Compel Don't Sell course and learn the art of selling with heart. Discover the secrets to the three-step sales waltz. Learn how to open a sales conversation and ask for the sale authentically in your own words. Dial to reserve your seat today. Dial 888-889-9212.
Can't take it anymore. Every time we have a meeting, he dominates the conversation.
I can't stand the way he walks into the room, as if he knows
it all.
What
can I do? She doesn't seem to like me or anything I do.
I'm tired of all the tensions. I just want to leave.
Divas and other difficult people rob us of precious time and energy. They make us feel small and insecure. They cause conflicts, frustration, anger, and even fear. In a world where having productive relationships and effective communication means the difference between success and absolute failure, you need tools that will help you remain calm, confident, and focused on the task at hand so that you accomplish your goals, regardless of any conflict that may be going on around you. Laura Baxter's new book, Dealing with Divas and Other Difficult Personalities, helps you do just that. It gives you the tools you need to remain calm, centered, and focused when you are dealing with difficult people. And it gives you the tools you need to better communicate so that you reach your goals with success. Dealing with Divas and Other Difficult Personalities, a mindful approach to improving relationships in your business or organization. Get your copy today.
So we're back, and we've been talking with Laura Baxter way out in Germany, and she's on the faculty of the Friedrich Alexander University in Erlangen, Germany, and she was on the faculty at Duke University prior to moving to Germany, and, you know, she's been there for 20 years, and Laura, I was just wondering if you would share with us how in the world, as an American opera singer, you got to Germany.
Actually, that's not atypical. It's expected of American opera singers that at some point in our career we go to Europe. And for me, for whatever reason, Germany, it was clear that I was going to go to Germany. Later, I figured out many of the different reasons why that, some of which didn't have anything at all to do with my career, which was a fascinating thing. For example, I live near Nuremberg here in Germany, and my father was stationed in Nuremberg after the war. And there was a friend here in Germany with whom he had lost contact. And after I got here, and especially when we got married, my parents then came to Germany for the wedding, and for my father. And this is the spiritual connection that we don't know about. We can't control, you know. For my father, being able to come back over here, he hadn't been here since World War II, and reconnect with that friend who lived about a kilometer away from where we were living at the time, it was something that absolutely gave him and his life closure. And that's something that I could not have controlled at all. As far as the operatic world, like I said, it's expected of us to come over here. And so that was very clear that I would come over here at some point. And once I got over here, I ended up getting married. We started our family, and that's why I ended up staying so long. Because usually, most of my colleagues will come for a few years and then go back home. Although there are quite a few here that have stayed as long as I have. So that's how we got to Germany. And it's not a very exciting story. It has been an exciting path for me. The more shocking thing was staying here so long. And that in itself has been also a beautiful German journey.
German.
Sorry, German. Yeah, German. Yes.
That's cute. So let me ask you, are there any moments in your life or your career, you've told us a little bit, either as a singer or as an author, where you felt a strong spiritual presence guiding you or a strong spiritual pull?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Many times. The first example that comes to mind is when I was still very much a young singer. I sung on quite a few different stages, but it was just before I began singing with the National Opera Company. I met a lady. Her name was Nan Burt, and Nan at the time was 92 years old. And she was a patron of the opera stage when I was singing in a particular production. It was a production of The Marriage of Figaro. And I had been in an accident, and the director, I'd been in an accident, but I still, you know, I looked terrible, but I was still going through with the show. There was no problem with that. And the director at the end of one of our rehearsals just said, "You need to go to Nan." And I'd heard about this person, but I'd never really met her. And so I said, "Okay, I'll go up to Nan." And I went up to her house, and it was a fascinating moment. She had guests. She had guests, so I didn't, you know, I didn't want to interrupt. And she said, "Sit out on the porch. I've been expecting you. Sit out on the porch, and I'll be there when they leave. They're about to leave."
Mm.
And she came out to the porch. I was sitting in a rocking chair on her porch, and she sat in the rocking chair next to me and started rocking, matching my rhythm.
Mm.
And she, in doing that, she just started telling me my life story. Everything about me. I had just gone through a separation with my first marriage, and she started telling me about my relationship to my husband. She started telling me about my career, everything. And, you know, all I could say is, how do you know this? Because nobody knew what she was saying at that mm-hmm. point, except for me. And she basically that evening gave me a stack of books to go home and read and come back the next day and tell her about it. And that I did. I did not read all six books, but I did read one of them. And that was, I think it's Jampolsky's, Love is Letting Go of Fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next day I went back, I managed to read that book that night. And I went back to her the next day, and it absolutely changed my life. Mm. The fact that the opposite of love is not hate. The mm-hmm. opposite of love is fear. And as a singer, especially a young singer, when you're trying to get ahead and you're worried and there are all these other good singers around you, and am I good enough? All these questions keep coming to your mind. To understand that those fears are the things that were holding me, you know, holding me back or holding all of us back, and not love, was for me new. And it was beautiful. It was deep. It was helpful. And then we talked about different ways of incorporating love in its depth in my work. And that happened in a couple of different aspects immediately. I mean, one of the things we talked about, you know, is I am Christian. And one of the things that she said is, why don't you just picture Jesus sitting in the front row when you sing? Mm. And what does that do to your performance? And, you know, does that help you become more relaxed? You're not singing this for your own glory. You're singing this for something for a higher power, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And one other thing that she taught me that stayed with me until today was to use mantras, but especially one mantra in particular, and that's I choose love. She, at some point, probably in the thousands of books also that she gave me, she said, you know, when you need it, all you need to do is just kind of repeat to yourself over and over again. If you're in a difficult situation, I choose love.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, yeah, Nan, you know, like I said, Nan was at the time I met her, she was 92. She lived to be 106. And I thought, you know, whatever. It was, you know, good advice. I'll think about it later. And at one point, a couple of years later, if that long, it may not have even been that long, I had a concert that was very, very, very difficult, where I was pretty concerned as to whether or not I'd be able to make it through it. It was a cappella, so there was no accompaniment. And if the choir made a mistake or I as a soloist made a mistake, we were out. You know, we'd have to start over. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of pressure. And as I was waiting to go on stage for that concert, I thought about what Nan said. And all I did at that point was just kind of out loud say, I said, you know, I choose love, I choose love, I choose love, I choose love. And then I started sort of saying it internally, and a calmness came over me, and it stayed with me through that entire concert. Mm-hmm. That was so beautiful. And I can't tell you from my experience how I sang that day. I know that the conductor was thrilled and, but for me, that was one of the first times I felt this, what I mentioned before, this feeling of just being a vessel for something far greater than, you know, than me, myself. So that was very, very, very powerful. In my book, there's a chapter, a chapter I call The Four Most Powerful States. And one of those states is the state of love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I talk to people about choosing pain or peace. Mm-hmm. And it's such a simple question whenever they want to get into an argument or they got to be right or they're trying to make a decision about what to do next, then just choose pain or peace. And mm-hmm. peace is all wrapped around love.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's beautiful. That is beautiful.
Okay, so we'll be right back. We're going to take another little break and we'll be back with Laura again. See you in just a second.
If you're enjoying the Ascended Masters at Work show, you'll love taking the next steps in your spiritual development with Reverend Shirlene in her workshops on the shores of sunny San Diego. Reverend Shirlene will teach you the mystical secrets shared by the Ascended Masters for lifting the veil of universal mystery. You'll discover and learn how to put into practice universal laws that increase your business, achieve financial freedom, and develop loving relationships. Learn the art of reading the universal signs. Discover the pure meaning of spiritualism and how to connect to the divine within you. Tap into the guidance that moves you from ordinary to extraordinary. Build a powerful relationship with spirit that serves your mission and purpose. Tap into your next steps with intuitive guidance you can trust. Each event has limited seating. If you're ready for your next steps on your spiritual path and want to make a difference in your life and the lives of those who love you, register at ascendedmastersatwork.com. That's ASCENDED, mastersatwork.com. Or dial 888-889-9212. That's 888-889-9212 to reserve your seat for this limited time offer.
Can't take it anymore. Every time we have a meeting, he dominates the conversation.
I can't stand the way he walks into the room, as if he knows
what
it all.
What can I do? She doesn't seem to like me or anything I do.
I'm tired of all the tensions. I just want to leave.
Divas and other difficult people rob us of precious time and energy. They make us feel small and insecure. They cause conflicts, frustration, anger, and even fear. In a world where having productive relationships and effective communication means the difference between success and absolute failure, you need tools that will help you remain calm, confident, and focused on the task at hand so that you accomplish your goals, regardless of any conflict that may be going on around you. Laura Baxter's new book, Dealing with Divas and Other Difficult Personalities, helps you do just that. It gives you the tools you need to remain calm, centered, and focused when you are dealing with difficult people. And it gives you the tools you need to better communicate so that you reach your goals with success. Dealing with Divas and Other Difficult Personalities, a mindful approach to improving relationships in your business or organization. Get your copy today.
And welcome back. You know, next week's going to be something else. At 2 o'clock on Thursday, we're going to have Claire Candy Howe, and she is an angelic walk-in. This ought to be really interesting. She's also an angel practitioner, Reiki master teacher, international radio show host. She's a clairvoyant, an inspirational speaker, and a writer and author who raises the consciousness of individuals so they can connect to their divine, eternal nature. And I bet you're wondering, what in the heck is an angelic walk-in? And you're not going to know unless you tune in next Thursday at 2 p.m. on BBS Station 1. So today we are talking to Laura Baxter, and I want her to share a little bit about her book because, you know, I don't know about you, but I have dealt with a lot of divas, and they're not so easy to work with. And Laura, I was just wondering if you would give us some ideas on maybe some four powerful states we can get into, or how to deal with these people, because it's so difficult and not everybody knows what to do.
That's the truth. I mean, what I've noticed more than anything else is the thing that brings us out of our, one of the most common things that brings us out of the center of our centers is other people, people we think are who are difficult, divas or otherwise. And that's the inspiration behind this book. Just to give you kind of a little bit of a background of the book itself, the book Dealing with Divas and Other Difficult Personalities is divided into four sections. The very first section is defining the situation, because divas, when we think of a stereotypical diva, we think sort of the opera singer, we think of the larger than life personality, you know, taking over the room, coming in and trying to be dominate everything. But that's just one type of person that we find to be difficult. And the interesting thing about the dominant person is, if you yourself are a very dominant person, you're going to find other dominant people actually more attractive.
Yeah, it's, they gravitate to them, right?
Exactly.
They kind of call them in.
Yeah, so for that person, though, for a very dominant person, someone who's much more introverted is less attractive, or I should say more annoying, because someone who's more introverted will have a tendency to need more time to make a decision, tends to be more of a planner, tends to have a lot of other wonderful characteristics that the dynamic dominant person doesn't have, but they communicate very differently. And so one of the main things that I focus on is getting away from or defining what a difficult person is for you yourself, for the reader. And the book itself has two goals. I think you mentioned this earlier. The first goal is to help the reader stay centered and calm, focused in their center when they're dealing with the difficult people. And the second is that they reach their goals, so that they figure out a way to communicate with these people, the people they find difficult, so that they can actually reach their goals. And the book starts out with, in the four sections, make up the word diva. It's an acronym for diva. First is defining the situation. The second is getting into an internal strength, or finding your internal strength, being in a strong inner state. And then the third is valuing yourself and the other diva. And the last is actually being able to associate, to be able to actually come into a binding contractual situation or agreement with the other person. So what you asked about the four most powerful states, that's part of actually creating a strong inner state. And the four most powerful states are, as I mentioned, the state of love, the state of gratitude, the state of forgiveness, and the state of play. And if when we learn to stay in those four states, to be able to forgive, to be grateful for everything that we have, including this interaction here with our diva, and the diva, by the way, is not, the word diva is actually feminine, but divas, as we all know, can also be men. To stay, to be grateful for the situation and even this interaction with our diva, to be able to I think, what have I said thus far? Forgiveness, to be able to forgive for the past as well, and to want to literally play, to be in a state of play, so to play with that person is incredibly deep. And what I mean with play is full of respect, full of awareness, want to come into a playful situation with that person.
Okay. I was going to ask you that question because, I pull angel cards on occasion and I've been getting that play card over and over again. And I thought, this is interesting.
It's an incredibly strong card. And it's one that we really know so little about. One of the things I show in my seminars are some pictures by a wonderful photographer here of an ice bear, that's German, sorry, of a polar bear, which comes into contact with some huskies. And the huskies, instead of going into a state, the bear is hunting. I mean, the bear clearly wants to attack the dogs. And what happens, though, the dogs go into a state of play. And instead of what you would expect is the bear, still attacks. Instead of that, the bear recognizes this playful posture from the dogs. Mm-hmm. And he himself goes into a state of play and literally starts playing with the dogs for over an hour. Mm-hmm. And according to the photographer, he comes back every day after that and continues to play with them for over an hour. This photographer, if you want to see this, Norbert Rosing, he's a German photographer for National Geographic. And it's an amazing, for me, it was an amazing, absolutely awakening moment to realize that when we, if we go into a state of play, first off, we're not as vulnerable to the person who is perhaps going to attack us or whatever, but also we're open to the other person, to other possibilities. We literally open ourselves to that person. And mm-hmm. It's an incredibly strong state to be in. I mean, flirting, for example, is a state of play. Mm-hmm. If you take any sexual aspect of it, put that aside, when you flirt with somebody, you come into a state of play where you're learning about that person and they're learning about you. And it can be very beautiful and it's easy. And it's much easier to go into play than into fear.
Absolutely. It's easier to do that. But the fear tends to resonate just so quickly because of that amygdala, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. That just tunes in instantly to fear and gives us all these warnings. And, fear comes over us so much faster.
Yeah, if you take the polar bear situation, the natural instinct for the dog would have been to go into a state of fear. So, fight or flight. And he didn't do that. And most of us, when we're coming into a situation where we feel insecure, is we go into the state of fight or flight, of fear, as opposed to this openness of playfulness.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying if we're feeling fearful, then we can just start playing and we can get beyond that? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
And maybe a bear will join us. Who knows?
if you're walking around in the Tetons, I would be listening for the bears. I don't know. Not to play with.
Absolutely.
That's a little different.
You never know where those guys are going to be, Sure. But to be honest, you can smell them before you hear them. So I've had my own experiences with them and I wasn't in a place of play. That's for sure. But I think it would be good for people who are going to step on stage that have this fright. I know you must have had that in the beginning of your career. And how do you deal with that now after you've been doing this for so many years?
Actually, I do just what we've been talking about. One of the first things I do is I say to myself, I really want to play with the people in this audience. I would love to go into a state of play with them, have fun. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned, the mantra, I choose love. It's very important to connect to that sense of love in yourself, and also to connect to send that sense of love into the room, and that helps calm as well. And the other, I mean, there's so many things as far as stage fright. One of the other things that's super important for your listeners is focus. People mm-hmm. who have stage fright are focusing on themselves. They're focusing on the mistakes they can make. They're focusing on whether or not, you know, what are the people going to think of me, et cetera. The focus needs to be to not have, as far as the positive focus is to have the focus on your message, to have the focus on the audience, and literally think, what do I want to give them as a present, as a gift from me to them? What do I want to give them today when I'm giving this presentation? And if you're focused on that, there's stage fright just doesn't exist.
Wow, that's awesome. So focus on being in present and focus on being in a space of wanting to play with them, wanting to have fun, wanting to enjoy being with them for that time that you were there to share.
Absolutely. And one last thing from the four most powerful states is the state of forgiveness. And this is so important. In the state of, when we're talking about stage fright, the state of forgiveness is you also sometimes have to forgive yourself for mistakes you've made in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Because often we sort of keep hitting ourselves over the head about a mistake that we made, you know, 2 years ago when we gave a presentation, or 10 years ago, or in elementary school. And you just got to forgive yourself and let go of it.
Yeah, and so, as I always say, they're not really mistakes. They're golden lessons in our growth, you know. None of it's a mistake.
Absolutely.
It's just because look at all the greats out there. Even Edison made 1,000 mistakes before he finally figured out how to light us up, right?
Yeah, the truth.
And Colonel Sanders, the same thing. He pushed his recipe 1,000 different times before he ever got anybody to take it on. Yeah. So, you know, nothing that we do is a mistake here in Earth School. The intention is for us to learn our valuable lessons so that we can learn to be in a place of love and forgiveness. And those are probably two of the most difficult states to be in, is love and forgiveness. And sometimes we can be, but other times it's just really tough because we're dealing with our diva. Would you agree, Laura?
Yes, absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
Awesome having you today. I've really enjoyed the what you brought to the show. And I was wondering if you have any final thoughts that you'd like to give to us. And one might be how to get your book, because it just sounds really, really interesting. And I will be putting it on the website so that people can get it if they'd like to.
There, as you said, there'll be a link on the website to be able to order it. And for the first 10 days, we are going to offer the Kindle version of the book for free.
Mm.
That's starting on the 25th of June. So if you're interested, that will be, if you go to the link and sign up for that, then we'll send you the information about how to get the book for free.
Awesome.
And then after that, the first 10 days, then obviously it'll be for sale then on Amazon and everywhere
else. Awesome. Awesome. So you'll be able to get it right off the website at the BBS site. And go ahead and sign up so that you can get your free one on the Kindle version. And Laura, thank you so much for being with us all the way from Germany.
Oh, thanks. Charlene, can I get to one point? There will be people listening to this later.
Yes.
For those people, if you buy the book, send us just your order number and we will send you a link to a webinar on the book, so that where we talk about a lot of different information about the book and how you can even deepen your experience.
And can those of us who are going to get it off the Kindle version also get that webinar?
Yeah. Yes. Send,
awesome.
send us send us your order number, and yes.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Laura. And I really, really appreciate it that you're spending time all the way from Germany. And I look forward to hearing you on the opera stage. I'm going to look for you now that I know you.
Thanks. Thank you so much for having me, Charlene. It was wonderful You're talking welcome. To you.
Okay, until next week, we will see you on Thursday at 2 p.m. next week with Claire Candy Howe, the walk-in angel. And we're going to learn all about how she did that, why she did that, and what that means. So we'll see you next week on Thursday at 2 o'clock from sunny San Diego.
Thank you for joining us on the Ascended Masters at Work show with spiritual life coach, Reverend Charlene Reeves. We hope you found our message enlightening in a way that will change your everyday interactions in work and play. Share the love. Pass on our web address, ascendedmastersatwork.com, and if you have a great story to share, we'd love to have you on the show. This has been a Massive Visibility Media production. Join us next week for the Ascended Masters at Work show. And while remembering the words of the late Wayne Dyer, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. We say namaste.